Ice and Fire have met. If you love Game of Thrones and you haven't picked up A Song of Ice and Fire, now is the time.
iBooks has an exclusive version of George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones called the Enhanced Editions that help you keep track of the storylines and the characters in a fun and interactive way.
You'll never need to consult the Targaryen family tree again.
These books are available exclusively on iBooks. Go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they're probably available where you live.
That's apple.co/Game of Thrones.
Welcome to another episode of Game of Owns. Join us, won't you?
Thank you, Lord Varys.
That's perfect.
If you thought this podcast has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention.
That's what a way to just come out of the gate.
This is our 377th episode, and we're halfway through week 3 of season 7. That's a lot of time that's passed.
We're almost halfway through season 7, period.
Oh, God.
Let that sink in for a second.
And today, we're joined by an all-star cast of guests.
As we talked about what we wanted to do this season and the types of guests that we wanted to have on our show with us and who from the community was important to talk with and who we were most excited to kind of hang out with throughout this season, one of the first things that we thought of was the folks who send in their owns all the time and who are the ones who are tweeting at us and hanging out with us and participating with us. And so I think there's no better way to celebrate episode 3 than with, I don't know what to call you guys, but
the best.
Our squad.
Can we go around the circle and introduce everyone that's here? Some of you listening, most of you listening will recognize these names. Mm-hmm. These are, I mean,
should we have them
they
give
need
their
no introduction.
Give their Twitter handle as well.
I am at Heathen King.
Heathen King.
My name is Grant. And I love you guys. I've been listening to Game of Owns for years now. I discovered you guys, I think, the day after Hard Home.
Wow.
And it was like, you guys were so just reverential of what you were like. What did we just witness here? What just happened? And just the right, like the Night's King just rising up, and it was like, man, I love these guys. I gotta stick around with them. And then you guys went into like book season, and I continued listening and was like, well, I'm just gonna attempt to send an own and see what happens.
Little did you know.
Yeah, and here we are.
Well, thank you for coming, Grant.
Thank you for having me.
Who wants to go next?
I'm Beauty Brienne on Twitter.
This is Brienne of Tarth, everyone.
The one and
the
only.
Brienne of Tarth.
Not actual Gwendolyn Christie, unfortunately. My real name is Marianne, and I don't even remember when I found the show. I just, I remembered seeing posts on Winter is Coming First and then Watchers on the Wall, and I decided to give it a try, but I couldn't jump in halfway, so I had to start at the very beginning and then just binge it until I caught up, and
that's hardcore.
I don't even remember when it was, but I figured eventually sending in an own wouldn't kill me, and it hasn't so far.
You're just one of the all-star owners of all time of our entire podcast. You have such a nice soft voice. We got to meet you in Nashville at Con of Thrones. You're such a lovely person, and some of your owns are cutting.
Oh. I don't know, it's nice. I mean, it's nice to interact with other fans and everything like that. And I'm far more eloquent on Twitter than I am on here, so you guys are in for a night. But I feel like, you know, with the owns and everything, it just adds a sense of community to everything.
We're so glad you came. Now you guys get to fight over it, Calhouns.
You're older. Oh, okay, fine. I'm Amy Calhoun. At acal6888 on Twitter. I think you guys were my first Game of Thrones podcast that I found when I started. So the first season that I watched live was season 5. So I listened to you guys starting from then. And then I went back and started from the beginning, chapter 1, and listened to all the book chapters after that. In terms of owns, yeah, I'm going to echo what Beauty Brienne said, and it's a sense of community on here that you don't necessarily get in real life all the time. So
the word on the street is it's become a family affair in the Calhoun household.
Sure has.
Something like that.
I think Jen needs no introduction either.
Hi, I'm Jen Calhoun, the younger sister of Amy Calhoun. You guys pretty much just refer to me as Jen Calhoun, but my handle is Calhooner. I got involved in the podcast, I think it was Amy. Actually, we were on vacation and I was like, I need something to do. Sorry, Mom. I needed something to do on the beach. And she was like, you need to listen to this podcast. And it was right before Hard Home. And yeah, it's been no looking back since. And we really got in hardcore when we went to go to your show in New York at, what was that, Rave of Thrones?
And, oh, you guys got to go to that?
Yeah.
I didn't get to go.
It was my birthday present. Thanks, Amy.
Oh man.
And you guys made it to Con of Thrones in Nashville. I remember meeting you guys at the podcast meetup. We've talked about it on some other episodes, but how warm was that room?
Oh my God, it was wonderful. Amazing.
That was the best moment of I was more nervous to meet you guys.
Oh, please. I was so nervous to meet them.
People who tweet us all the time. Like I can't believe it. I'm like so stressed out about it, but we had such a nice time.
Hannah and I have been so excited to record this episode and to have you guys on, and it would have been amazing to have everyone on, obviously, but I think we're already juggling a handful of voices here, so this is an experimental recording, but what better
it's
week
be fun.
To do it than John and Daenerys.
John Aerys, you mean?
So how does everyone feel right now?
Yeah, give us some like broad, before we kind of dive into our discussion questions, just some broad overall thoughts and feelings about this episode, and feel free to just jump in and kind of...
Okay, it was only for a split second, but can we talk about how tired Mira Reed looks?
Mm. I know.
Oh,
I just want to give her a hug and a bath and then put her to bed.
She doesn't want to be here. She's been dragged... She was dragged along by her brother who died 3 seasons ago, who was blown up by a pumpkin bomb. And she's done. Poor girl.
Well, can we talk about how... Bran, the Bran and Sansa interaction at the Weirwood Tree, and Sansa just leaves him there, and Bran is very confident that he will somehow get back to the castle alone by himself.
I completely forgot about
that.
Needs to
be.
Unless Mira's like creeping in the side of the woods or something.
He's Doc Manhattan now. He can just blink his eyes and he'll go back into Winterfell.
How convenient.
Next season's on Mars.
It seems like it's just not important to him where he is, because he's all places at all times, just like Peter Baelish.
Oh God.
Well, and what was so weird about that conversation was he was basically just telling Sansa to, you know, just be prepared for every eventuality. That's all he was really saying. But he said it in such a way that it was just like, listen to me, I'm a philosophy school dropout, you know. Like,
hey, I studied philosophy.
Same.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I dropped out.
He sounded like he was about to be locked in a ward somewhere, and this was kind of his last conversation before he's committed somewhere.
I think you're onto something there.
I hope
Brienne.
I am.
Can I call you Brienne?
Yes.
Do I need to start with beauty?
If you like. I mean, yes. I don't mind a compliment, but...
I think this might make some sense of what you're talking about. We had a series of tweets DM'd to us by Haley Bowery of the Manimals, who played A Con of Thrones, and it's important that we read these. Dan Angeluki on Twitter, at Luki in the Sky, I don't know if he sent any owns, but this set surely works. He made a photo set. It says, I put Jaden Smith tweets on Bran Stark, and it checks out. So I'm going to read a couple of these. How can mirrors be real if our eyes aren't real?
Oh, I saw these.
Next up, trees are never sad. Look at them every once in a while. They're quite beautiful.
Well, okay.
Here's true. Another one. I'm 13. This is ridiculous. Remember,
that's
every
the best
word
one so far
is capitalized at the beginning. Here's a good one. UFOs.
With an apostrophe.
Yeah, with an apostrophe. So does that shed any light on the Bran situation with you, Marianne?
A little bit. See, to me, it just sounds like he's Like, I've been calling him BrandBot 3000 in my head, and it's like he's downloading software patches, and it's not going very well.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent metaphor.
I used to work in IT, and every so often you'd get an update that went bad, and you'd have to roll the whole system back.
Yep.
And to me, that's what it looks like he's going towards, even though I know that's, I mean, he's doing something weird. But he's just, he's not human right now. Like, not in his mind.
Yeah, it's that trope of a Superman who becomes so detached from humanity that's why, like, Doc Manhattan is a great example of, from Watchmen. It's somebody who just, they've escalated so far and they're just so above humanity that they mm-hmm. can't even connect with anyone.
Well, we had this interview, I'm not sure if you guys were all able to see, with Hempstead Wright this week, who talked about how he is a three-eyed raven. He's not Bran Stark, which means he's really just a vehicle for the greater world's fate. And that basically he's this whole new character at this point. And so we can't even look at him as Bran anymore. We should be looking at him as the three-eyed raven. You know, I don't know, again, what that means. I don't know, but I think that's an interesting insight.
It makes sense, but if he's a three-eyed raven, then where did Bran go? Like, is it like when Theon turned into Reek and he just kind of devolved or something like that?
I think Sansa was trying to ask these questions and he was just like, you never understand.
Do you think it has something to do with the fact that now maybe he's seen so much that he understands how futile time and identity is, and he's just like, I've seen everything, now I just have to coast through it, and so he's just sort of detached?
I think it's partly that, and then partly he just might be overwhelmed, because if you see everything that ever has been or ever will be, your brain can't handle it. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're the three-eyed raven, if you're Jaden Smith, if you're Bran, you just, you can't process all of that as fast as you should.
Can we talk about the moment he chose to, like, tell Sansa, like,
oh, man.
Hey, this is, this is what I can do.
Jerk move.
It really was.
Yeah, what was that
also
about?
Like, it's not even just that, like, he picked an awful moment, but all he said was, it was snowing during your wedding and you were wearing white, which is like, yeah.
And you looked
like,
very
anybody
beautiful.
Anybody could have just guessed that. So he could have just said, like, anything.
He could have said, remember that afternoon where that person you didn't like was shoved off of the walls of Winterfell and she fell very hard? That was memorable.
Yeah. She kind of sneaked in the end.
Yeah. And then you jumped off of the wall into a snowdrift and survived the entire way down.
Say almost anything
without
else.
Without any injury whatsoever.
Yeah. You could have told her about that.
You could have picked literally anything else.
Well, then I think we have to assume that it has something to do with what happens. Because it just seems, especially placed right beside the Baelish quote, doesn't it just seem too heavy for you guys to just...
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a way to convey a certain amount of information to her. With that, it's hard to describe, because I think it's going to come into play like next episode or the episode after that, where she's going to realize, whatever he says, I can trust what he's saying, no matter mm-hmm. what, because he can see it. He needs to prove it to her somehow, and that's the most devastating way to prove it to her.
So it needed to be dark, is what you're saying?
It needed to be like something that definitely grabbed her attention, and nothing more attention grabbing than the most traumatic experience of your life,
mm-hmm.
awful as it may be.
All of this is tied in exactly with one of the questions that we asked this week in our discussion question roundup. The question is, Bran tells Sansa he needs to talk to Jon. What is Bran so eager to reveal to Jon? What does Bran's return to Winterfell mean for the North? So curious to hear your guys' thoughts on specifically what it is that Bran's going to tell Jon, what we hope that he's going to tell Jon, and why Sansa understanding that he's legit is so important in all of that.
I think we all know that it's R plus L equals J.
But
I think we all hope.
Does he know? Does he know who John's father is? Because as far as we know, he just saw him being born.
I think that's the rub of why it's important for him to talk to John. We all kind of know, we know his parentage, but why is it important for him, for Bran, whose one goal is to fight the White Walkers? Like, why is that revelation so important to it? And the only thing I can think of is that it gives him a claim to the throne, being the firstborn son's son. and that can somehow unite the realm or something along those lines to go fight the White Walkers.
It can also give him access to a dragon, which could potentially be important.
I wonder if Jon does become a dragon rider, if it begins with, he's a Targaryen, we can trust what Bran says, so you should let him approach the dragons and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Or will it be, look at Jon, they get along so well, and here's this information, and then it makes more sense to Jon because he felt so close to them already.
I think the latter.
I hope it's the latter.
You think so?
I hope so. I don't know if hope and thinking is the same thing, but I think that it's much more poetic for the dragons to either be paying special attention to Jon or for them to him to have some sort of special connection, and then finding out that that's because he has Targaryen blood in him.
I liked where you're headed with that, though, Grant, because like you said, if Bran's main goal is to, I guess, defeat or ride out, or I guess we don't really know what he knows is the conclusion of this,
right?
I guess, catastrophe on Planetos. But whatever it is, I suppose he sees it as the best option. That, I mean, he's still Bran Stark, no matter how much we've lost. So I'm going to assume at this point that he's still a good guy, if there is a good guy. And so if what you're saying is true, then if he needs to talk to Jon, you're definitely right. It has something to do with saving the world. So it's like, I guess we can just assume whatever he tells Jon will be the crux of.
Right.
That means that's part of his destiny. That's so cool to think about.
It's what does the revelation have to do with winning, I guess.
And what does it lead to?
Yeah.
Bran also knows where the White Walkers came from and how they were created by the children.
Right.
That could be something that is going to help Jon.
Bran also knows that Benjen's alive. Well, kind of alive.
He's like, I need to see Jon. Benjen's kind of alive.
That's the only piece of info I have to give him.
I love it. Honestly, that would be really important for Jon to hear. It would make him feel good.
Well, it was because he was looking for Benjen forever.
Yeah.
Really.
I think it's interesting because so much of assumption, I think, since the episode aired on Sunday is that, well, obviously this is R plus L equals J. That has to be the answer. But I really like all these other ideas of Bran being able to give a lot of insight to Jon and what's going on in the North, because he's spent an unbelievable amount of time there, that maybe something outside this R plus L equals J realm could be even more beneficial than him understanding at this point what his parentage is.
What do you think it could be?
What has he learned?
Bran saw in the first episode. Yeah.
What has he learned?
Well, he knows about
everything.
Was it dragon glass that they used?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knows about that, which Jon already knows.
The mark?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. There is that, yeah.
There is the mark problem.
Yeah, he could tell Jon, you know, I may have accidentally done something stupid.
Hey, Jon, I messed up. The wall's coming down because I came through.
He's not going to care.
Local man ruins everything.
Deadpan delivery when he tells Jon, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, no, you looked really beautiful the night you and Gret were in the cave.
Also, you're doing amazing, sweetie.
Maybe that's why Bran looks so hollow, because he's seen things that a boy that age should not see.
I know. Aww. He's only 13. UFOs.
Apostrophe UFO.
I know. So what does Bran's return to Winterfell mean for the North? He's turned down position as Lord of Winterfell. What does it mean?
I know he's turned down the position of Lord of Winterfell, but I think it's going to throw Littlefinger off guard a little bit, because no one was expecting Bran to just pop back into existence. And he might still see Bran as a threat to his whatever he's doing. I don't know. But I'd be interested to see how he reacts to Bran coming back.
Did they ever solve the assassin problem in the show?
No.
Cat's paw is still out.
Yeah. And they've been hammering on that cat's paw dagger.
A ton this season, yeah.
Well, they've never come out and said anything about it, really. Like, HBO hasn't. It's all been promotional pictures, and then everyone else has been jumping on it.
It showed up in Sam's book about the Long Night.
That's an old dagger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Bran and Winterfell knowing everything, I would say that apart from Rorge and Biter, that Littlefinger might be the most unfortunate to be near Bran Stark in Westeros, right?
Yeah.
Is he going to attempt to assassinate him?
With the same knife. Hmm.
With the same dagger. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
It's poetic.
I could definitely see it, though.
Because if something like that happens, that's, oh man, that's the end of LF, man. That's the end of Baelish.
Yeah, I don't see it going well for him if he tries, but I know that he's got such designs on, well, Sansa in the North that he wouldn't want anything to, you know, pose a threat to that.
To compromise that relationship.
And if that's he dark. Can see into the throne room, he could have seen Baelish betray Ned Stark to begin with.
Oh, for sure.
And everything. I mean, we already confirmed that he knows about what happened with Ramsay and Sansa, and that was directly a move from Baelish as well.
Do you think that Bran shows up in Winterfell and just looks at everybody who's there and then just starts going through their whole history to see what kind of dirt he can get up on them?
The whole sexual history of everyone in Westeros.
Yeah, that's why he's so hollow, because
it's rough out there. So a question peeping. That I've had a little bit that I've seen floating around is whether or not Jon and Bran are ever going to actually meet, if they'll miss each other. And so I'm curious as to what you guys think about that. If we think that it's guaranteed and that all of this is kind of leading up to the necessity of them having a conversation and kind of downloading this information to each other, or if we think that there's some possibility that it could play out in a way that Bran and Jon end up missing each other for whatever reason.
If they miss each other, how does Jon find out about his parentage? How do we find out that next step of... So they clearly set up something in the season finale last year where they revealed that Lyanna was his mother, but they also left that extra mystery of what his real name was. And that's something that's going to tantalize us beyond R plus L equals J. And that's something that they can't just leave by the wayside. So they have to give us an answer.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it didn't happen in the crypt scene from episode 2, where some of us had speculated that it could have been Littlefinger that somehow spilled that. Unless anybody else has any specific brand thoughts, we did have a comment from Aaron Allison Mabry, who says, I'm not sure if Bran or Melisandre is the Orin of Game of Thrones, but I know it's one of them. So a little Parks and Rec crossover for anybody. And that was pretty funny.
Go away, Orin.
I just want to know who the little Sebastian is of Game of Thrones. Maybe it's...
Ghost?
Gendry?
No, Summer.
Gendry?
Already dead.
Summer? That means one of them.
Right in. Please tell us what your opinions are on this crossover.
Okay, so next question, if you guys are ready, and probably the biggest question of the episode is, what did Melisandre mean when she told Varys, I have to die in this strange country just like you? What will she do in Volantis?
I was thinking maybe she's going to get some more Red Priests and tell them that there's two princes that was promised. Princesses that were promised.
Mm-hmm.
Tell her, like, hey, we're wrong. There's two of them and you all need to come.
Do you think that she believes that there's two of them?
I think she's open to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's probably going back to the Fire Pope saying, hey, our Messiah.
Right, just getting Heathen King live right now. It's perfect.
our Messiah or possible Messiahs are back in Westeros, like officially. We know it. Can you guys come and help us out with your fire magic and, you know, help us save the world?
Kind of like a rallying of her own magical army.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah, I'm into this. And they all have these wonderful gemstone necklaces. And at the end, they have to all take them off and combine the power of the gemstone necklaces. So it's an army
into
of crones. Well, either that,
Clone-tron?
They give all the power to Ghost, and Ghost gets like 700 feet tall and eats everyone.
Oh, that'd be
awesome. That's why we haven't seen him. They're saving the budget for a 700 foot tall Ghost.
I love it.
Ghost eats everyone. 2K17.
Well, what's everybody else think?
Well, I'm wondering if she went back to Volantis and said, hey, there's two of them, if they would believe her. Because for so long, people have been fixed on, you know, it's the prince that was promised. And even though people have said, well, it could be, you know, Daenerys, no one has ever brought up the fact that there could be multiple messiahs. And I'm just wondering if they would think that, you know, she was maybe losing it a little bit, or, you know, saying she was misinterpreting things, which we know that she has in the past.
Another thing I was thinking about is if we as well should be taking her role literally, you know? So not only maybe the people of Volantis might not necessarily buy into what she's trying to sell over there, but if we ourselves as a, I almost said reader, but we're not reading this yet, as somebody who's watching can believe anything other than she united ice and fire, what else is there? Does she have any role beyond getting out of the way and then coming back to peacefully die, or to predict Varys's death, or
who said peacefully
anything, you know?
Yeah.
So I know. That's what I'm wondering.
With the death part of it, I'm curious, because there are, just like everyone in Westeros and everyone in Essos, there are theories out there that Varys and Melisandre are both secret Targaryens. Sorry.
Okay.
I think it's mermaid.
Go on.
Mermaid. And like Varys was through the Blackfyre line, and Melisandre was through Bloodraven, if I remember right. So they have king's blood, technically.
So my question would be, what does them being secret Targaryens, how does that play to their advantage?
I don't know.
But they can turn into dragons. Well,
oh, that makes sense. That's how Varys got to Dorne quickly.
The reason I'm lending show credence to this is because they did include the story of how Varys was cut. And that had to do with, you know, genital sacrifice. And then he heard a voice in the flames. Something happened. But
you're onto something here.
There's something there. I just don't know what it is.
Not that this line means much, because it could mean just
they die
reference to their station, but they said we're both, was it Melisandre that said, but we're both not common folk any longer.
Oh, that's true.
And they kind of shared a look.
Mm-hmm.
It could have just been to say we're counselors and now look how far it's gone, but they've been doing that for a while.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. And I'm curious as to what you guys think about this. If we are to assume, like I think a lot of us are, that Littlefinger is kind of on his last straw, as somebody who's been pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes, and then to have Varys not make it to the end as another key player who's been pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes, how do we think that Varys dying plays into kind of the end game? And I'm making the assumption that death for Varys and for Melisandre is not this season. I'm thinking that we're talking season 8 at this point.
Yeah, it's end game.
Mm-hmm. For both of them. Yeah. But curious about your thoughts on just Varys dying and kind of what that means and how that could happen and what we're supposed to think about that.
I'm starting to wonder if Varys has something to do with, like, whether he's 100% on the Targaryen side. We've talked with my roommates about whether there's like a spy in Dany's ranks that keeps putting the Lannisters one step ahead.
Yeah.
And who would that be other than Varys? He's in every meeting with her. He knows all the stuff, and maybe he's just putting money on both horses.
It was totally foreshadowed last episode too, with the with the betrayal.
We already had that conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like Tyrion, Dany, and also Varys in that room talking about what was going to happen at Casterly Rock. Tyrion wouldn't tell his sister. So.
And did you see Varys's face at the end of his discussion with Melisandre?
How tan it was. Yes.
Oh, that. And I just haven't seen. I haven't seen Varys shook that hard. So I think he's up to stuff that he's not used to being up to.
Yeah.
Because people have said stuff to him, but he would feel more comfortable if he was fully in charge of everything that he's doing.
Well, it's the same thing with Littlefinger. They're both way out of their element right now. They're in their element in King's Landing, scheming against one another.
But they underestimated their charges.
Yeah. You've got Littlefinger in the north, where he's surrounded by Northmen, and he can't really scheme very well there. And then Varys is, I don't know, there's something there to it.
Varys, pretty tan.
Went a little
too. Varys has legs.
Okay. He has legs, yeah. He's walking around. He's way out of he's out of the sea.
Yep, he's out of his element.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. When I rewatched this episode a couple times this week, I spent one rewatch because I just am psycho. Specifically watching Varys walking places.
I believe you.
They put a lot of emphasis on his legs in this episode.
Well, he runs.
They really did.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
He runs into there, and I'm just like,
was that a direct response to our podcast? Or
yes,
100%
to the mermaid theory. Absolutely. They're like, no, he's not a mermaid, guys. Let it go.
Look at him run. Mermaids don't run like that.
I did hear though that someone said, you know, who else had legs? Ariel.
That's true. That's,
so. I was literally about to say that. Thank you. But I do like this idea. I mean, this is an interesting discussion that we're having about Varys being out of his element and maybe in over his head. And I'm kind of into this idea of maybe he's the one who's betraying Dany, especially after that super straightforward conversation. And maybe there's just too many It's interesting because I just feel like we've always assumed that someone like Varys has it under control because he's always been steps ahead of everybody else for so, so long. But and we've talked about this a lot through this season, is that we've got a changing of the guard here. And so we've got some of our underdogs are now the people who are making the calls and making decisions and having an impact on actual politics of Westeros, whereas before there was a different way of thinking. And so I'm into this idea of like these old guard people are out of their element because things are being changed and shaken up a little bit.
And Dany so especially has his number. Like the way she just came right out and confronted him. And, you know, he kind of threw it right back in her face. But at the same time, there is something being foreshadowed there. And I don't know what it is.
I just don't want to believe that Varys is going to betray Dany.
Well,
it's probably naive.
In book terms, Varys betrays everybody. He's you know, behind Aegon and all of that stuff. But
it just seems so short-sighted, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of Varys and Illyrio's scheming in the books is all about folly, right? You read Brendan Beefish's great essays on it, about that conspiracy that changes every 5 minutes. You know, like they just are winging it, but they're trying to get this perfect prince installed. And Varys is also just kind of winging it when it comes to installing a Targaryen, no matter if it was Viserys or Dany.
Which is interesting, then. I think that from a show perspective, why he would betray Dany for the Lannister side.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
Because I do think that this whole, Targaryen at any cost thing, from a book perspective, definitely holds a lot of weight. But from a show perspective, it seems like an interesting choice for him to then side with the Lannisters. But I don't know. We have Jeff Burleson, who commented on our Facebook, who talked about how Varys will die from this betrayal to Dany, and that this all kind of ties together. And that's what Melisandre is alluding to.
And that she'll gather the army of Valor to come fight the others.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so Varys is, let's just assume he's in the mix there somewhere, stuck between people that he could potentially be working for on both sides. That's tough.
Yeah.
Man, I shudder to think about the reaction he's going to have when he learns that the Long Night and the Night King and the White Walkers are all real.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a scene when he sees, you know, ice spiders or whatever. Just think
it's
about
be
it.
A scene for all of us.
It's going to cut right to his legs running as fast as he can.
As he jumps into the water and swims away.
But since he's a dragon too, he turns into a dragon mermaid.
Yeah. He's a harpy. Oh my gosh.
Next question is, will we see a wedge develop between Cersei and Jaime this season? Both Euron Greyjoy and the new Olenna revelation could cause a rift between the two siblings, or is their alliance as strong as ever?
There had better be a wedge or a rift or a canyon or something.
Yeah.
A canyon.
At the very least, a pillow.
Well, he was saying no. He was like, no, I'm not up for this. I just want to...
You saw the same scene I saw. Don't give me that.
I think he might be in a little bit of denial almost because he wants Cersei to be maybe a little more sane, and he wants to believe that they are the only two that matter. But at the same time, he's getting all this stuff thrown at him like, you know, no, she's kind of crazy. You know, you might have to cut her loose. And I think something huge is going to have to happen for him to actually come to terms with that. But I also think he should just leave King's Landing and go somewhere north.
Somewhere north with
somewhere.
Someone.
Brienne Bolt 2K17.
Just saying.
Have you guys noticed that the only people that he's really talked to since he left Brienne have been Kingslayers? Like, you've had Walder Frey, you've got Euron Greyjoy, we could consider Cersei, but then you've got Olenna Tyrell, and all of them have murdered kings somehow. And that reflects on the Kingslayer himself. Like, when he talked to Walder Frey, it was, God, am I turning into this guy?
Mm-hmm.
When he sees Euron, he sees that younger version of himself before Brienne came along and kind of, you know, made him humble.
And he lost his hand.
Yeah, and he lost his hand. And it's that cocky kind of Trumpian, you know, Euron that everybody, like, Hannah's so in love with. I don't get it. But then
I feel like I need to constantly defend myself.
No, you don't.
Here.
But then, did you see this flourish of a bow at the end of it? Sorry, Grant.
No, that's okay.
It was the most, when he was just like, ha, in front of Cersei, I was just like, oh my God. That's definitely what Book Euron would have done though, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We can say anything we want about Euron, but I feel like he is not too far off from Book Euron, which is lucky. Mm-hmm.
One more thing. His last conversation with Olenna was about Joffrey being murdered, but it was to protect her granddaughter. It was to protect her from somebody who is a vicious abuser. And I think Jaime can understand that because that's why he killed Aerys. You know, it was to protect the kingdom. It was to stop burning everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was to stop the Mad King, and now he's in bed with the Mad Queen, so maybe he'll smarten up finally.
I feel like after he didn't do anything when Cersei blew up the Sept, I'm not really sure what's gonna actually cause a rift between them, other than maybe Tyrion. Other than that, I don't think she can do anything worse.
You're right. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was what he literally killed the king to stop him from doing.
Yeah.
But he lets her do it.
And he's still sleeping with her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Forgetting the moments
that's what
of
I've been worried about.
Recollection at White Sword Tower.
Mm-hmm.
So Grant, you're saying that because of those conversations, he finally met one that he related to that he can relate for the reasons why she did it. And maybe in that he can see, I guess, maybe growing and understanding what he did inside of himself, and that would change how he sees Cersei.
I could only hope that the show would be that deep, but I doubt it.
We had this really great comment from Derek Foster that is exactly on the same lines, that kind of sums up everything we're trying to say. And he says, yes, Jaime is the Kingslayer, and I strongly believe that he will kill Cersei in the end, the same as he killed Aegon. Cersei is a mad queen and her actions are very similar to the mad king's. He'll see that the war is shifting in Dany's favor, and as Cersei has shown at Baelor, she's willing to burn the city down. I expect Jaime to become the Queenslayer to protect the people, just as he did when he became the Kingslayer. So yeah, kind of again, hearkening back to Cersei is turning into the mad queen, and oh, whether or not sure. Jaime's going to be able to pick up on each and every one of those things over the course of the next couple episodes.
Jaime is my favorite character. Like, I love him. I'll go to bat for him for anything. But I feel like Nikolai said in, like, the off season that he feels like Jaime's storyline resets, like, every season.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can sometimes see that, like, he makes so much progress with Brienne, and then he's just, within a few episodes, it's kind of lost. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just that he's in King's Landing and he's lost. But I feel like it would have been more authentic to see him slowly realize it for himself that he wants to separate himself, and to see the consistent development in Jaime instead of, like, he makes 12 steps forward and then he takes, like, 11 steps backwards.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried for him.
No, it is frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Would you guys say that this episode was a step back for him?
Mm-hmm.
With the way he was strutting? No, that steps forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, that march, honestly, with the Reigns of Castamere in the background, with Bronn behind him.
If anything, it may have been like a shuffle sideways, but I don't think it was a step back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only time he lost his cool in the conversation with Olenna is when she started to talk badly about Cersei. He's like, all right, then I'm going to leave. He's like, I don't need to talk about this with you.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, I mean, he just looked her straight in the eyes and took whatever she had to say until he started to talk bad. But maybe that's just her hitting a nerve, hitting with and agreeing with something that he doesn't want to acknowledge he feels to. I don't know.
Maybe it will be Euron that does it finally. You know, like, if she turns away from him to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
That'll be intense.
And I'm interested and excited to see that play out, because there is very obviously, I mean, hello, we used this conversation that they had in this episode, a rift between Jaime and Euron, and Jaime is not thrilled about Euron's actions and parading.
He's a bully. He finds a weakness, mm-hmm. and he exploits it. And mm-hmm. you know, he emasculates Jamie every single time he sees him. Like, oh, mm-hmm. it gets under your skin. And that's the point of that character.
Yeah.
I think that Euron's going to play a big role in the, in driving this wedge.
Well, then yay, Euron.
Yeah, I'll take it.
On Sunday night, we have an episode titled Spoils of War coming on our television mm-hmm. screen.
Is that the episode title?
That's the title.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Spoils of War. That's pretty cool. I'm really excited. Really, really excited.
We haven't seen much actual war yet. Well, we always get about 13 seconds of battle and then it's done. So I'm hoping that there's some warring happening.
Are we getting a field of fire?
Oh, I hope so.
Well, we're definitely getting spoils.
And if so, if we do get a field of fire, what is Jaime charging towards? Is he going to be the dragon slayer?
I don't know.
Maybe he's charging away. Bron? Oh, I have bad feelings about Bron.
I don't want to talk about Bron and fire, guys.
Well, I saw a picture today. I think it was one of the ones they released during the new episode, but it's just them in the field and they look very concerned. And neither of them are on fire, but I just have a bad feeling. So I wouldn't, I wouldn't get too attached. I know.
I'm already too attached. Too late.
I know.
We haven't lost any major characters yet this season, really, except for the Sand Snakes. That's been it.
Olenna.
Well, Olenna. I'm sorry.
Jeez.
Well, she was alive when we last saw her. I forgot all
that. It's true.
But wow, that death scene. Oh, man. I know. Like, how can you...
It almost wasn't sad.
How can you drop a mic on your life? Like, the most depressing thing about that is none of us will be that cool ever in our
lives. That's true. I'm all right, though, with her having that. She deserved it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Plus, look where she lives.
She can have it.
Yeah. She had an antidote the whole time.
Oh, no. She's just tough enough that she could just handle it.
Yeah.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Have some tea.
We've seen episode 3. It's been... I mean, you guys have been listening to us and we've been reading your tweets. So I feel like we've all been in this together. So it's been a long road, but Daenerys and Jon finally met and we can only expect more to blossom. We're 3 episisodes into a 7 episode season. Episode 4 is this weekend. How do you guys feel overall about season 7 and just in general, just how things have been?
It's been fast. Like, I understand that they have to speed things up, but it's, there's a lot being thrown at us and I'm okay with it. But it's just like every episode there's no breathing room, but I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it too. Like we've been so looking forward to John and Danny for years and years and years. And I felt like they let that scene breathe nicely, even though everything is happening so fast. They are still hitting little character moments. Like, We are so lucky to have gotten that Olenna Tyrell farewell, you know, like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of people give the show shit about, you know, not handling characters correctly, but they still will give us those character moments that we are here for.
Yeah, I think before the season started, when all the interviews were saying how fast it was going to be and how epic it's going to be the whole time, there's just going to be battle after battle, I was a little worried we were going to lose those one-on-one character moments, because those are, I think, some of the best parts of the show. So I'm really happy that they've kept those going. The Tyrion and Jon scenes from this episode, I thought, were like some of the best. So yeah, I would prefer those moments and then just skip to the end of the Highgarden battle. Mm-hmm. I don't skip think to the that end. We missed anything with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with things like the Highgarden fight, we don't lose anything by not seeing it. Like, if they didn't show the Field of Fire, we would lose something by not seeing it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that sequence where Jaime was walking up to the tower was
amazing.
With a little bit of Reigns of Castamere in the background.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Was that not one of your favorite in the whole show? It was just, it was top, it had to be top, I don't know, 6 for me. Weird number.
Top 7.5.
I don't know. I really liked it. It just kept cutting back to him and it's just in the, so cool. I just rewatched it last night.
And you know, they just filmed it in a long take. So somewhere there's just a long take of him just walking up a castle.
That's cool.
Super cool.
With the way it cut, it felt like, you know, some kind of Kubrickian, you know, film mm-hmm. technique, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, mm-hmm. he's center frame, he's moving forward constantly, and then skip to the next thing where he's up a level, and then up another level, then at the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love mm-hmm. that Game of Thrones now has become its own genre, and that we can play inside of that genre.
Yeah.
Right.
And inside of that world. And I think that now that we're seven, eight episodes into the series now, they've had all this time to learn and to, you know, take risks and to brainstorm, you know, and put cool ideas up. And I'm excited to see what they have saved up for us for the rest of the season.
There's still so many characters they have to meet too. Like, just seeing Davos tell off Dany was like one of the top five favorite It's just the two shot of Dany and John talking. Then all of a sudden, Davos just steps forward, yep. and you're like, oh my God, this yep. is about to, Davos is about to throw some shit down.
The focus pulls off of John.
I'm here for it.
Yep.
He's all salty after Missandei was mean to him. He's ready to go.
Most of the word from critics I've seen after this episode has been that the Dany and John scenes were superb. And I thought it was just ripe to be torn apart, because it's like, there's so much pressure to get that dialogue right, especially when they're yeah. the only ones talking to each other. But I don't think I was alone. I guess I know I wasn't alone. I thought it was, after a few watches, just so true to their characters mm-hmm. and so true to that throne room, because like the conversations went that way because everyone in that room liked each other sincerely. They were talking about serious stuff, but they liked each other. Like, they respected each other, at least, I thought. And that's why they were able to have that kind of candid conversation standing. It ended up, she started on the throne, but they, you know, they ended up standing all beside each other.
Well, and they disarmed him so much. Like, they took away his sword. They took away his boat. You know, the dragons fly up. That's intimidating him. He's in that big, long hallway, and she's just sitting there, and this is all supposed to be an intimidation tactic, and we're supposed to worry about him, but we know Dany.
Yeah.
It shouldn't, these two should get along, but instead when they stand face to face, it's like, I said before the episode, I think this is like when The Rock met Hulk Hogan, you know, like,
wow.
I like that.
They're like facing off and then turning to the crowd and waiting for somebody to throw a punch, but nobody does.
Everyone's just throwing hands in the air.
Do you guys think we're going to continue to see these long drawn out John and Dany scenes? Do you think that this is kind of going to continue to be the backbone of what we've got through the rest of the season? Or do you think that we're going to transition?
If their end game, we have to care about their relationship if they're end game.
Yeah. I think they're going to reach a common ground. I know that was one of the questions that you guys put on Facebook, but I think Dany was starting to warm up to him a little bit towards the end when she's like, you have to get to work, Jon Snow. She didn't say it like that.
Longing look.
It was a cry.
She did have a last longing look.
I don't know if it was a longing look. I think it was more contemplative. But mm-hmm. I also, mm-hmm. the thought of Dany and John together gives me rash, so.
You're not Team Daenerys yet?
I can't. I just can't do it.
No.
But what about our episode with Radio Westeros? Weren't you convinced?
What about the slideshow video we created and put it on our Twitter?
That was wonderful.
That
didn't
convince you guys.
That was amazing.
You guys like that J-Lo?
I'm a hard sell, so.
I tend to agree with that. Like, I make a lot of jokes about it, and I think it's kind of fun, but I do think that, like, I could go either way. And I think that the thing that I like the most about their relationship that I'm excited to watch build on, and this doesn't even have to be romantic, is the fact that they have such a mutual, or they will have this mutual understanding, and they approach things in such a similar way that I think that there's going to be a lot of respect for each other there. And I'm really looking forward to these long conversations that we've had in episode 3. And I would love it if we could continue to explore these two people coming together with these two very different experiences, with both of them feeling like they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. I would love it if we still had these long, drawn-out Dany and John scenes throughout the rest of the season, because I think that they've got a really big job to do, and they've got a great chemistry, and it doesn't have to be romantic. It can be romantic. I wouldn't hate it if it was, but I do think that, like, they've got something powerful, and I'm excited to see them continue to explore what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I want to see them evolve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long he's going to stay at Dragonstone, though. An episode or two, maybe? He's got to go north. Yeah. He's got to go beyond the wall.
He's got stuff to do.
And she's got to go with her dragons to do whatever she's got to do. Right. Maybe we'll get another episode of them, but then I feel like they're going to go their separate ways before, obviously, eventually coming back together. But
or they're going to fall in love, and he's going to miss his flight, and yeah, he's just going to stay there forever.
I miss his flight.
Wow.
I had a daydream last night. I think it was a night dream, but I wasn't asleep. And
going on.
It was Jon and Daenerys growing close because she won't let him leave, and the dragon glass is getting mined, and then fast forward however long later, and stuff's going down, and like they've made such a friendship with each other at this point that for some reason, even though she has much closer friends there, I guess she maybe subconsciously considers him more capable because he's a pretty stout dude. He's pretty good with the sword, at least. I just imagine if stuff goes down, she's got to leave really quickly. Like, oh, I've got to go fight this. And maybe they're mid-hangout when she gets the news. And she's like, I got to jump on my dragons and go. What if she was like, you need to come with me, and tells him to get on one of the dragons?
Whoa.
That would need some kind of montage.
That would require a montage.
Gotta do a montage.
I think that's an interesting day-night dream.
Well, we're going to leave you with that before we transition into Owns. No big deal, just doing it with the best owners ever.
No big deal. We're going to have no Owns to read.
Oh, yes, you are.
Okay, in preparation for this episode, since I knew you guys were going to be on with us, I purposely left your Owns off of our own call sheet that we read from in the hopes that you would give it to us live. So if each of you could do us the honors and let us know your own for the episode, that would be great.
I'll go ahead.
Okay, I'll go.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Fight.
I was going to say my own Olenna goes to Olenna because oh, nice. Everyone else, you know, I figure everyone else gave her an own, and I'm jumping on that train because she did. I mean, they said in the interview after the show that she owned her own death scene, and she did, or she won it. Regardless, I'm messing this up, so Grant, you go.
She's like, I'm better on Twitter.
You're doing amazing.
My own went to Samwell Tarly for reading the book and following the instructions. Like, curing grayscale was building a goddamn IKEA dresser.
But, are you going to read your hashtags? I know they're there.
But I also shouted at the screen not to shake the hand of the man who just had the highly contagious infectious disease.
Yeah.
At least don't linger.
It was sweet. Now everybody has grayscale.
Maybe the paper mites will eat the grayscale.
At least he can cure it if he gets it.
That's true.
True, true, true.
He's going to Valyria to get an army of stone men, cure them, save the day.
Oh my gosh. Confirmed.
And paper mites.
Pretty here first and last.
First and last.
So on Sunday I said Olenna, but on second watch I changed my mind to my one true king, Robb Stark, for his wonderful king battle strategy. Yes, yeah, always. That Jamie copied from him. So
that's a good own.
Love it.
No big deal, Rob. Still getting owns in season 7.
Every day.
Always. I gave my own to the cinematography in this episode. As a film school nerd, I lost it one first. The Jamie shots were amazing. And just how absolutely gorgeous the shots were of Jon and Tyrion on the cliffs and Jon and Daenerys on the cliffs. I couldn't look away. Like, it was hard, but it was amazing.
Did you notice the shot where the camera was off the cliff about 17 feet, you know what I mean, on a crane and was pointed back toward them? That was so cool.
That's amazing. There's also the shot when Jon is leaving Daenerys' chambers and it's dark and he's silhouetted and looks exactly like Ned. The hair and the armor, and you're just like, Ned. There's just in every scene, you could just look for how beautifully they shot it. So, own to that.
That was my own, by the way, from the last episode.
Whoa.
That's a good own.
Is that everybody?
Did everybody go? I think everybody went.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can give another one if you need a
second. I can do a double own. I can do another one.
No one said 2K17. I'm just confused. Sorry. It's like, I'm just confused. Sorry.
Well, I could talk about Ilaria for a little bit, but that's another podcast.
I can talk more about how they showed Jamie's butt.
Oh, yeah.
own to that. Thank you, cinematography.
I could talk about how they mentioned Torrhen Stark, the king who knelt, because everybody thinks John is going to be the second king who knelt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Foreshadowing.
Well, going back to Jaime's rear end, you could talk about how worried people were that Cersei might not deploy them.
Yeah. I was terrified. I was like, girl, you better clean your mouth. You kill my boy like that, I swear to God.
So before we descend into chaos, we descend into our owns with All-Star Game of Owns.
Hi, this is Cornmo, 357 Lover. And this song is called Song of Arya. All the way to where I'm going, keep your words with me. I pull them out of times of trouble, all the way home. All the way to where I'm going.
First own of the evening comes from Bryce D. L. Akery, who says, owned a brand for moving back into his parents' basement with unlimited high-speed WireNet access.
Stephanie Merrill at S. Merrily, preemptive owned to Danny's face when Jorah returns and she finds out John is indirectly responsible for curing him. Hashtag Maester Sam.
Jerry in Laos, owned to Cersei for how she negotiated with the rep from the Iron Bank. Wish I had the balls to talk to my bank like that about my credit card.
So next is at Names Too Common. My own goes to Rhaegal and Viserion for swooping by and yelling, no shit, as Jon said he wasn't a Stark. Hashtag, go fawn over your aunt, I guess.
That dragon definitely was like, no shit. That's hilarious.
Brendan Fitzpatrick, owned to the music in this episode, especially Reigns of Castamere coming in and playing over Jaime at Highgarden reveal and walk. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. At Graham in Ireland writes, owned to Sir Davos for keeping John's resume to 2 pages or less. Hashtag right man for the job.
Debs Curtis says, owned to Olenna for raging against the dying of the light like the gangsta lady she was born to be. Hashtag slaying when others would be praying.
Amanda Taylor at So Cute Amanda, my uncle goes to Cersei for inspiring the new trend of pixie cuts in King's Landing, which she did.
She did.
Mm-hmm. What's she it did. To you at ICYI? First own ever goes to Davos for getting to the point. Jon Snow, he's king of the North. Hashtag less is more.
That was an awesome Davos. Mm-hmm.
At Petite Pensus, owns to the Brooding Bastards album cover Jon and Tyrion were clearly posing for on the cliffs of Dragonstone. Hashtag brooding hair off.
Marlene Montooth, owned to whichever dragon purposely dive bombed Jon Snow. Hashtag wet me undies.
Bookum Dano, owned to Samwell Tarly for forcing dear old dad to ride into battle with his backup sword. Hashtag cheap talk off. Hashtag as seen on TV. Hashtag 4 easy payments.
That's a good own.
God lord.
That's great.
At Jem Morris, owned to Cersei for getting the sheets changed. Hashtag fresh linen. Hashtag no shame. Hashtag baby Lannister 2K18.
That's dark.
No.
Anya Chudov owned to Sansa for starting to let on and holding down the fort. Hashtag finally. Hashtag team Sansa.
Yes.
Mm. When Jon said she's starting to let on.
Sure is.
Wow. Yeah. Love it.
At the Polycrafter, owned to Euron for subtly destroying Jaime in front of the Iron Throne twice in a row.
Not now. We'll talk later.
Lane McCurran says, tell Lady Olenna I want her to know she's my own.
Oh,
oh. So good.
So good.
That's so cool.
Sam Rosenberg, owned to Bronn for having no lines but still getting his best catchphrase in the episode. Hashtag 10 good men. Hashtag impregnate the bitch.
Cry Havoc on Twitter. Own goes to Bran for telling Sansa about Jon's parentage. Oh, wait, he didn't. The anticipation is killing me.
Next, we have Drinking GOT, who says, owned to Bran for doing a ton of acid and coming home from art school all different.
Eric Lewis said, my own goes to Davos for being the best hype man in the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At Training Maester, own goes to Sam for shaking Jorah's hand without a glove. First human contact in ages. And it was a kind one.
Aww. Thoughtful.
My cold, dead heart.
Travis Cole
says... At least you're honest. You should read Travis Cole's handle.
I love it.
Our mother's
Travis
listening.
Cole at The Naked Baby says, my own goes to Bronn for getting quoted by Tyrion and for rolling into Highgarden like a boss. Hashtag give me 10 good men and I'll impregnate the bitch.
Mike Moss said, owned to Brand for having the self-confidence that he'll be able to leave the Weirwood tree once Sansa departs. Hashtag, dude, where's my sled?
Too real.
Dire Corgi writes to us from the north, owned to Tyrion for recognizing he has no chance in an emo contest against a guy wearing a man bud and fur coat on a southern aisle. Good God, that's true.
Our BFF Kim Renfro says, owned to Cersei's handmaiden for just getting the same haircut and dress as her new boss. Hashtag loyal employee. Hashtag crazy Cersei uniform.
2K17.
Mr. Crimson 99 says, owned to Euron for having the balls to ask Jaime for sex tips. Hashtag we'll talk later. Hashtag Euron marry Cersei 2K17. And side note, I really want to see that wedding.
The red will run.
It'll be so goth. Matt Leiden at MPFK, owned to Sam for starting a wonderful dermatology program at the Citadel. Hashtag, don't forget to exfoliate.
Maybe you just follow the directions. I don't know why everybody's so impressed. It's not like you cure grayscale or anything. Oh, wait. Anyway, just saying.
Steph Nelson says, owned Tyrion for explaining my life. I was drunk pretty much the whole time. Bonus to Olenna going out like a fucking champ. True story.
Robert Targaryen says, owned goes to Cersei in 2 episodes. Cersei took 4 of Dany's pieces off the board. If she's not owning, I don't know who is.
The Pete Awaken writes, owned to Cersei for finally getting a good night's sleep. Hashtag incest rest. Hashtag sand snake zzz.
Next we have at Power Howard. Owned to Jorah for getting some bomb rest to heal that grayscale. Oh, and also hashtag blessed for some help from the climate.
Pete Sizemore says, owned to Sam for reading the fucking manual. Hashtag book save Westeros K17.
Stephanie at Stephanie_JC. There are no owns this week. There are only Olenas.
Olenas.
Nice, Stephanie.
Shout out to Stephanie, who is our cousin. So.
Oh. Yeah. Stephanie. Yeah. Family affair.
It sure is. And Radio Westeros says, owned to the Papermites in the Citadel for eating flesh.
On Facebook, Lou John, owned to Bran for being like your vegan cousin who shows up at Thanksgiving and decides to describe how turkeys are slaughtered during dinner. Hashtag, Sansa was just asking a question. Hashtag, did you have to bring that night up?
Abby, Elisa, on so Facebook, funny. So many great moments, but my own has to go to Olenna Tyrell for going out with one last mic drop. Roses are red and Joffrey was blue. Your son is dead. I'm a Kingslayer. Too. Hashtag dying roses still have thorns.
Next, you have Megan Hendricks, who says, first ever own. Welcome. After about a year of listening to the podcast, this episode was stacked higher than the wall with my own worthy moments. My own goes to Bran with his I need to speak with John and it's complicated lines. I can't be the only one hoping for a Rhaegar scene. Hashtag flashbacks, anyone? Hashtag understatements of the year. Honorable mentions to Daenerys calling out Tyrion's wise man quotes, Tyrion's comments about brooding, and Jon's reaction to the dragons. Hashtag might have to check your small clothes.
Anna Morale, I'm sorry, I slaughtered that. My own goes to the side eye Jon Snow gave Davos right before he spilled the resurrection news. Hashtag is stabbed in the heart a euphemism? Hashtag STFU side eye. Hashtag my rebirth was cooler than your rebirth.
Wow. Allie Claire Tarwater. So difficult to choose, but I think I have to go with Tyrion. White Walkers, the Night King, the Army of the Dead. It's almost a relief to confront a comfortable, familiar monster like my sister.
Yeah.
Ashaya from the History of Westeros says, owned to Indira Barma for her fantastic acting. Truly moved despite hating the Ilaria stuff overall.
So good.
So true.
Sabrina Tobin, owned to Sam for taking some liquid luck and not getting grayscale, or worse, expelled. 50 points to House Tarly. 50 points to you.
Tony Ferry, my own goes to the real heroes of the episode, rest and climate. Hashtag grayscale cure.
And last but definitely not least, Ashley Costello on Facebook says, my own goes to Ned and Kat. Must have been really tough raising Bran.
Oh.
Oh.
Raisin Bran. So many jokes in one.
Well, yeah, that has layers. Layers and layers.
Dropping the sunglasses.
I love it.
Raisin Bran.
Grant, Jen, Amy, Marianne, thank you so much for coming onto our podcast, and thank you so much for listening for all these years and writing in owns every week. This has been, especially after doing those owns, this has been so a little surreal and so special. Thank you.
It was fun.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, seriously.
It's been a dream. So we're really glad that we got to do this together.
You guys were fun to podcast with.
Yeah, I've never done this before, yeah. So I enjoyed it.
Same.
Mm-hmm. If you guys want to send in your own owns, you can find them on Twitter at Game of Owns, on Facebook at Game of Owns, or you can email them at contact@gameofowns.com.
Thank you.
I feel That's like it. You guys haven't had awesome. the this is the month of August, so when you go on iTunes, leave 5 stars because only 5 stars will do.
This is the month of August.
Anything less than 5 stars will get you poisoned wine.
Yeah.
Anything less than 5 stars and we'll push you out of the high tower. Jamie will push you out of the high tower. Don't let that tempt any of you, Calhoun.
Jamie's butt Deal. Will push you out.
4 stars for you.
Worth it. We also have another podcast, Rewatch the Throne, if you're interested in rewatching. We started from the very beginning and we are now making our way through season 2 with our friend Evan. So you can find that over at rewatchthethrone.com.
And Blackwater is next, by the way.
Yeah, so no big deal.
Ooh. Yeah, we're really excited for that. I'm excited to hear Bran, or not Bran, but Bran. Also Bran. Well, guys, like we said, this has been a really cool second episode of the week for such an important meeting of Ice and Fire, and I feel like we kind of met Ice and Fire here. If I don't really know which is which, but finally the show came together, just all together perfectly.
Yeah, this was wild.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we'll be back early next week with our review of season 7, episode 4, Spoils of War. So stay tuned.